Welcome to the Story Discovery Podcast. I'm your host, J.W. McAteer. Coming up, you'll hear a new work from our free online publication, Etched Onyx Magazine. Please join me and co-host T.J. Cedar after the reading, when we talk with the author about their work and all things writing and otherwise. This podcast and all related materials are a production of Onyx Publications. All works, stories, and poems are copyright 2023, all rights reserved. On today's show, we have a collection of poems written and narrated by Andy Miles. Settle in and enjoy.
The Art of Kneading. I am in the kitchen, and I am kneading dough. I am in the kitchen with the dough clinging to me in desperation. There is not enough flour. There is not enough flour because there are too many eggs, or these eggs are too big. They come from the chickens outside in the yard, and they are so big. I am in the kitchen, and I am kneading dough. The windows are open, crickets are screaming for sex, unabashed. And I am in the kitchen, and I am kneading dough. There is not enough flour because I have to push the air away with my palms, and it slides like mud into the hole I leave behind. I drink instead of breathe it in. People will come to this damp kitchen tomorrow, so it is midnight, and I am kneading dough. My mother always said you cannot have an Italian funeral without pasta. She was barely Italian, but Italian enough for pasta at her funeral. So it is midnight. I am in the kitchen, and I am kneading dough. I will keep adding flour until there is enough. The Rescue. We are still there, you and I, pressed against the wall of the lighthouse, shivering in the ocean spray, talking loudly about loneliness as if noise itself could solidify in the space between us and keep us apart. We are still there. My eyes are fixed on your lips, watching, terrified, as the moment begins to blur with the film of the past, as it fills itself with the surge of everything to come. I am still watching as the fine lines of your face smear into your older self, that look of ravenous desire dwindling into indifference. I went back there to pull her away from that instant, the last before we became we. But she watched as the sheen of the present tarnished into the past, and she chose you. Relationship Inquest. That pastoral landscape, slightly askew. You plucked the last petal. Let me go. The ant reaching from a frayed grass blade to your wicker picnic basket. Sneaky devil, you whispered before brushing me aside. The stem of a ripe strawberry. A broken button on your favorite winter coat. A damp, faded dish towel slouching on the counter. I am sorry. I make you sad. Unenlightenment. I unflop myself off the couch and walk toe to heel back up the stairs, where I unkiss my children and unsmooth their blankets. I unclean them, removing soap, rubbing dirt onto their skin and into their hair. I unshout, swallowing volume as they skitter around. Earlier, I will uneat the raspberry and place it carefully back on its stem. I will unfeed the chickens, pulling back the seeds and corn from their greedy beaks. At the beginning, in bed, I will unsay what escaped with unlove, and while I am at it, I will unyell, unask, unembrace, untell. I will un-us, so we can do it all again, but better. You asked me to tell you something obvious. At the end, you become maniacally vibrant or listlessly muted. I will not be asleep at midday. I will drink the sun buzzing with plasma joy. How could I give up? A moment, a single kiss. You are the bird who nests in my soffit. I hate you, invading my being, but I love to watch you fly. You leaned in to kiss me. When rebuffed, you said, when you die, you will die with one less kiss in your life. So I grabbed you and kissed you and kissed you again.
You've just listened to a collection of poems written by Andy Miles. And we have Andy on the show today to talk about these pieces and writing life in general. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so excited to have you on. Really enjoyed this poetry and glad to share it with the world. I am also joined by our co-host, TJ Cedar from Down Under. Welcome, TJ.
Hello, hello from Down Under.
Well, the first thing we do, Andy, when we kick off the show is just have you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a science writer in Washington, D.C. I live here with my husband and two children, two and four, and four chickens. I primarily think of myself as a nonfiction writer, mostly because of my science writing, but also a lot of the creative writing that I do is nonfiction. I write a lot of lyric essays, experimental and hybrid pieces, things like that. But I started writing poetry about 3 years ago and have been doing both since then. And I really like crossing genres and mixing things up and that kind of writing. I grew up in Southern California, but I've lived in a lot of places. I've lived in Chicago and New York and Istanbul, but I've been in D.C. for about 10 years now.
Oh, that's great. Well, D.C. is my old hometown, so I get back there every now and then.
It's a nice place.
It's a lot different than when I was there. Much cooler now. Used to empty out when all the workers went home. Well, let's talk about your poetry. So I really enjoyed these pieces. And in particular, I think one of my all-time favorites now is you asked me to tell you something obvious. And I have a lot of questions about that. We'll get to that at the end. But I just, there's a line in there I also really enjoy. But The Art of Needing, I guess The Rescue, The Relationship Inquest, and maybe it's the end one. Yeah. You asked me to tell you something. Obviously, it seemed to be like relationship focused. Is that the case?
Well, yes. A lot of the writing that I've been doing the past year or so has really been about, I think it's about regret or sort of the multiverse, the other, you know, my other selves that are close, not so different from you know, if one decision was different. And so I've sort of been exploring that idea and sort of looking in the past and how things are different. And so I think a lot of these are a reflection of that, especially The Rescue and Unenlightenment and Relationship Inquest. They're sort of looking back on those kinds of things, thinking about what could be different.
Yeah, interesting.
You've done a lot of different varieties of writing, or you engage with words in many different ways. So the very practical, I imagine, the science writing with a lot of fact-checking, you know, use of your beloved Oxford comma, which we made note of on your website. When you move into your, when you put your poet's hat on, do you get a sense of throwing off the traces of formal writing to allow yourself to roam? Because there's a, in the way that you physically lay out words on the page. There's an obvious joy in the space and dimensionality. You use the word multiverse, but that dimensionality or multiplicity of language. Is this a facet of your personality? What are we meeting here?
Well, for me, poetry is, there's a lot of things that I really enjoy about poetry. I like the authority that you're provided in poetry, that you can, if I tell you that a tree decides the day and time that it's cut down, in the world of the poem, that's true. And in, you know, nonfiction, even in memoir, you're very much tied to facts. So I really enjoy that freedom and playing around with that. I also really like that you can sort of take these giant issues and take a very small bite. I could write a 6,000 word essay about how one of the heartbreaking things about a relationship is all of those little unkindnesses that build up over the years. And, or I could make up the word un-us and talk about just wanting to do it all again, but better, right? So it's just something very small. And I feel like that captures the same idea. And it allows the reader to bring in their own experience as well. Instead of me going on and on and on about what I think about it, it sort of gives the reader that freedom. So I really do enjoy that about poetry. The differences in all of the poems that I have here, mostly it's because I tend to manufacture inspiration. I'm not the kind of person who, well, I don't have a lot of time, and I don't really ever feel like I'm channeling something or something's just coming to me. It tends to be more work for me. Hmm. And so a lot of the writing that I do, poetry specifically, is from prompts that I've gotten from different workshops that I've taken, instructors that I've had, friends even. And those prompts help me then explore things differently. So The Art of Kneading, was the prompt had to do with repetition. And for me, bringing out as soon as I started writing different words again, over and over again, I was sort of reminded of that spiral that you get in grief. And it just sort of brought that to the top of my mind. And so, you know, the different prompts will bring out different things. And again, with The Art of Kneading, the way that I laid it out on the page was sort of relentless. And there's no breaks. There's no stanzas. It's just on and on and on and on, which is sort of how I interpret grief. So I like to be able to use the form. I don't really often do form poetry, but you know how I lay it out, the visuals to sort of inform the poem as well.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So
yeah, great answer.
Let's just talk about inspiration, because you've hit on something that Elizabeth Gilbert likes to talk about, which is that the idea that one must be violently struck down by the muse in order to create. And she challenges that beautifully and coherently. And I hear you speaking into that same space. And I'm curious about what you think about your own creativity from the point of view of, if you're not struck down by the muse, what is it that moves you? What creates your desire to create?
Well, that's a good question. I guess I would have to say, I think that all forms of writing, creative writing, are really about telling the world that they're not alone. And in reading poetry, in reading fiction, in reading nonfiction, it's all about realizing that we're not alone in this world and that our experiences are not singular, which sometimes can be a little bit disheartening. You're like, oh, I'm not the only one who's ever experienced this. But I actually think that it's a good thing, because you realize that there are so many people out there who have had the same experiences as you and understand you. So I like to sort of, it's my way of reaching out. I'm an introvert. It's very hard for me to spend, you know, I'm always so shy in public and in settings like that. But I do really feel like for me, it's a reaching out to other people. And so I do sometimes have inspiration, but I feel like the work of creativity for me, a lot of times when I do write something that gets edited very lightly, or I almost never, you know, don't touch it, it tends to be because I've been working on it in my head for 20 years. It's an idea that I've had. It's something that actually The Rescue was kind of like that for me, because it was an ekphrastic poem. So it was from a photo that I saw of a lighthouse. And that sort of spurred something for me. And then, you know, the connection to this Virginia Woolf quote from To the Lighthouse, which I've always loved, where she talks about She said it with her foot on the threshold, she waited a moment longer in a scene which was vanishing even as she looked. And then she moved and she took Minta's arm and left the room, and it changed. It shaped itself differently. It had become, she knew, giving one last look over her shoulder, already the past. And I've always loved that quote. It's my favorite quote from anything I've ever read. And I just sort of, so all of those ideas were already there. It was something I was thinking about. The relationship was something that I'm thinking about. And when I saw that photo, it just, it all came together very quickly for me. Mm. And that, but again, it was, you know, things that I had been thinking about for years and years and years, these idea, the idea of something becoming the past in the moment. So then in a way, you know, inspiration struck over the course of 2 decades.
That is fantastic. That's what Neil Gaiman calls the composting process. And he says, we just, as writers, we gather our life experiences into us, or however you might visualize it, and it all composts down. And out of that,
I love that. I've never heard that before. Yeah. That's amazing.
And I think that's just brilliant, because it's so reassuring that everything that you encounter can be nourishing and can be rejuvenating and all of that sort of wonderful, wonderful stuff. So you've been on the trajectory of becoming a writer, though, since you were small. Like, was it your first book 8 years old in the school library? Have I recalled that correctly?
Yes, there was some contest or something, and I wrote a small book with, you know, my mom transcribed it for me, and I think I wrote most of it, you know, just in the bathtub or something. I remember sitting next to me, and I was, you know, writing it. And my friend drew some pictures for it. I didn't win the contest, and honestly, was not very good. But the librarian had a small press, and she quote unquote published it. And it's actually still there in my elementary school library. You can check it out.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things with the art of kneading that kind of triggered when you were describing sort of the multiverse and the, I'm not sure of the terminology you used, but the repetition, is that what I got out of it was that there was something like in her mind, in the air, part of the poem that I couldn't see, but I could kind of feel. And then you kind of drop the bomb that, you know, the mom died. And anyway, I really enjoy that aspect of it and wanted to let you know.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure. And then I do want to talk about the spacing. Like TJ said, you asked me to tell me something obvious. How do you decide, like, so for our listeners, it's all over the page, and it seems very intentional, and it seems to work really well, at least as far as it did in my reading of it. But how do you decide what to do with that space when you say you play with the space on the page and kind of make that part of the poem?
So for that one, that was, again, another prompt. And it was actually sort of a combination of two prompts that I got from a workshop that I was in. And one of them, we were listing animals and places. And so the bird that nests in the soffit was where that came from. And the other one was to use space. And so it was a challenge specifically for those of us who don't generally write like that, which is me. And I took that to really think about each of the groupings of words. So I wanted them to sort of, I wanted the spaces to emphasize things. There's no punctuation in there. Mm-hmm. So there's no commas, there's no periods. It's all just one long thing. But for example, at the end of it, when you die, you will die. And I really liked having those on the same line, but separated those two ideas, balancing. So there was a lot of thinking about each little sort of nugget of clumps of words. And I wanted each of those clumps to sort of be their own thing as well. And then the amount of space had to do with sort of what I saw as the pauses and the length of time, I guess, that I wanted to sort of put in there.
Interesting.
And then there's a little bit of a visual of just staggered, which I started to do intentionally towards the end to sort of stagger some of it, because it is sort of about time and going backwards. So I kind of started putting things, you know, in this backwards time as well. Huh. So there's a lot of different things that I was thinking about when I was doing it. I don't know if, you know, a lot of times it's just like, oh, I just think it looks better there.
Right.
Or I just think that word should be next to that word, or no, these two shouldn't be together. So it's a lot of just playing around with it.
Yeah, very cool. Well, before I throw it back to TJ for a sec, I think it really worked for this poem in particular, but have you taken this idea, so it came from a prompt, you used it, I think, very effectively, then have you applied it anywhere else, like in any of your other works?
Yes, I have. A couple of different poems, and one of them, I use it to sort of really emphasize some big moments in the poem. And I've used it more sparingly than in this. It's in stanzas, but using just one line in a stanza, only having two words, one at the beginning and one at the end. And so it has loosened me up. I have to say that every time I have an instructor who teaches me something new, it's so great to sort of have your mind blown, and then you can just see writing in a different way. I had a wonderful teacher in college. So my senior year of college, I took a creative writing course with Eula Biss, and she had us write an essay every week in a different form. So different, a textbook or a recipe or an index. And I was so grateful to her for teaching me that in college, because it was sort of my last chance. And I would not be the writer that I am today without her, and without having seen that kind of writing at that point in my life, because it broke everything for me. It made me realize that you could break all of the rules and you could try anything, and you didn't have to write in those an essay didn't mean five paragraphs with a, you know, thesis statement and supporting. you could essay, you could try, you could think on the page in a million different ways. And so I do try to incorporate those kinds of things when I learn them.
Okay, very cool. Well, and when you die, you will die with one less kiss in your life is like out of a movie. I love that. I mean, that is going to be part of my life going forward. I think it's amazing. It's an amazing line.
Thank you. That's really kind of you to
say. It's beautiful. All right, TJ.
Okay, let's talk about teachers and inspiration, because it's always wonderful to be able to talk to a creative about their commitment to growing and learning in really tangible ways by attending workshops. You know, I'm a passionate believer that this is a craft, that there is a lot that to be learned from other writers. It's very, very valuable. I'm not a huge fan of the old, springing forth from Zeus's forehead fully formed idea of creativity. I think it's incredibly crippling. So I love that you have this college professor that was so inspiring. But what about these workshops? Do you randomly engage with them? Are you an active seeker of growth and learning?
I attend a lot of workshops. I seek them out. Nowadays, I mean, this the story of everyone, right? In the pandemic, I started going to these online workshops, which I had never really known about or thought about before, and since then have been taking them very regularly. And I've actually built a community from some of the workshops that I've taken and joined online critique groups. And a friend of mine and I started our own little critique group off of one of those. And I regularly meet with, so that's actually more of a nonfiction prose. And then I also have a poetry group that I meet with regularly. We just show each other poems and we just critique. And I do go to workshops quite often still, because as you said, it is a craft, and it's also something that gets me writing, you know, because it's a lot of work and I get tired, but having a deadline, having a group, having people that I have to show something to, and I have to, you know, put it up on the Google Drive at a certain point in time, it keeps me going and is invaluable to me.
Jumping on that, the notion of accountability and having a community, it sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, this is very much a part of your creative soul and your life, that there is in and of itself that community is valuable. Would I be right in saying that?
It is. I think it's very hard to write in a vacuum. I think if you're not getting feedback from people you trust who will be like, this is not working, you just start to get up in your own writing too much. You lose track of what is good and what is not good. And also it's really good to see other people's writing. There's so often things that inspire me. I read something that somebody else wrote, which makes me think about something. And then I write my own sort of response to it in a different way and a different take on it. And I think that it is really, really important for me to have that kind of community.
So for our beloved listeners out there who are thinking, a poetry workshop or two would probably be just the tea that I need. Do you have any particular platforms or organizations that you would direct a keen being toward to start their workshop journey?
Yes, I would. I started at Beyond Baroque, which is a creative writing space in Southern California, and I was brought there through another workshop thing that I had taken, it sort of was one to the next to the next. That's where I started, and they have some really great offerings there online. And the other thing I would recommend is sort of if there are poets that you like, there's, you know, depending on how popular they are, there's a good chance that they're going to give a workshop in the next year. I mean, because now it's so much more popular and easy to do than it was a few years ago.
Right.
And so Google their names and see if they're going to do a workshop or, you know, that I think that might be because it does help to like the writing of the person that you're taking from. It can help to dislike their writing too, because then you just can sort of have something like to work off of. But it's a good place to start. So I think that might be a good idea.
Yeah. Well, I would recommend in Nashville, The Porch. They do online work. It's a writer's collective. And just for our listeners, and you can sign up for the courses anywhere with Zoom classes these days, which is how they do the majority
exactly.
of them now. Yeah. So we love The Porch. Well, all right. So you're a science writer. Can you tell us, like, first, I have a couple questions with this, but I guess the first is like, what does a science writer do? What does that entail? And then how does that affect the way you write creatively, or does it at all, or does it just wear you out? Like, how does that all connect?
So a science writer or a science communicator basically tries to take scientific topics and make it accessible to the public. So
it's like newsletters or things like along those lines?
Press releases. It could be press releases for reporters, or it could be, you know, newsletters. There are science journalists as well. So it does all those kinds of things. I write science highlights often, which take a recent discovery, a recent paper that's come out in one of the scientific journals, and sort of I go through it. I talk to experts. I talk to subject matter experts. I talk to the scientific writer, the principal investigator who wrote the paper. And then I distill it into a story that is hopefully interesting and accessible. And so does it get into my creative writing? Absolutely. Less so in my poetry, a little bit less so, but in my nonfiction, it's impossible for me to get away from. It's a lens that I see the world through, and it's how I sort of analyze the world. So everything, I have an essay that I wrote, which was also about grief and sequoia trees and how sequoias are able to survive massive fires. And I have another one about the loss of faith and my loss of faith. And I used imaginary numbers in that. And I have another one that I did actually use the multiverse, the idea of multiverses and infinity and things like that. So I find so much really good metaphors and interesting human principles in there. And I think being a science writer has made me, I think all writing makes you a better writer, no matter what kind of writing it is. For me specifically, science writing has been really helpful in honing my craft of writing, because taking something that big, sometimes 100 years worth of scientific discoveries, and trying to put it into a paragraph and then talking about how it, you know, the new things that are coming out of that, that is a skill that
Definitely.
Has really helped me with all kinds of writing.
Yeah.
So, so I think it's been really helpful. And I will say, I think, like I said, I think all forms of writing make you a better writer. So,
yeah.
So you have an MFA, which is a Master of Fine Art, for those of us who don't want Americanos. But you did an undergraduate. Now, what was your undergraduate?
I studied neurobiology when I was there. And I studied creative writing as well. So I, but I did work in a neurobiology lab for a couple of years. I was thinking about going down the scientific path. I worked in a fruit fly laboratory.
Wow.
Yeah, I maintained stocks. Which keeping fruit flies alive. It was a whole thing.
They don't live long though, do they? Like 7 days or something? I don't know.
Oh, they live a couple weeks. They live like they can live up to like 60 days. But they live in these little tubes with the food at the bottom, and it gets all like manky. So you have to like dump them into new tubes every couple of weeks, and they just keep reproducing.
There's a poem in there somewhere.
Oh, probably. So I did that. But I sort of knew towards the end of my undergrad that I wasn't going to end up in science. I mean, I wasn't sure, but I somewhere in the back of my mind. I also worked at an Innocence Project when I was in undergrad.
Wow. That's very cool.
Later. And because I thought, oh, maybe I'll be a lawyer. And then I worked there and I thinking, no, I can't be a lawyer.
That's a hard perspective to have. It was really tough.
Yeah, it was really tough. But again, it was a good experience for me. So,
yeah. Well, do your coworkers know about your creative writing?
Not really.
Not at all.
No.
I'm just curious.
No.
Yeah.
No. I keep that mostly to myself. One or two of them who I'm closer with know a little bit about it, but it's a very different world.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. That makes sense. The thing that blew my mind was you told us today on the show that you've only been writing poetry for 3 years, but you've got quite a few poems published. So that's pretty impressive. Any tips for folks on how you make that happen?
It's a numbers game.
Yeah.
We've heard that before. I mean, I have a poet friend who has a couple books published, and he said that when he got his 1,000th rejection, he had like a party.
Yeah.
And, you know,
dang.
Like, and that's, I'm working my way towards 1,000. And, you know, he says every rejection is just confirmation that you're doing the work.
Yeah.
There's so many journals right now. There's so many people trying to get into those journals, and you have to find people who like your writing. Mm-hmm. So I'm also the nonfiction editor of Honey Guide, which is a small literary journal.
Oh.
And we got a couple pieces this last time around that had some science in them, like a little bit of, you know, science about mice. And I was like, I love this. This is amazing. And you're telling me a story and I'm feeling things. And suddenly I'm feeling sorry for a mouse. What are you doing to me? This is crazy. And that she found the right person, right? The right editor. And so that's the other thing to remember is that it's really not personal. You know, we had space for 5 essays and we had way more submissions that I would have liked to have included. But, you know, it's just maybe how you're feeling on that particular day. Or so I try to remind myself of that. It does hurt. I mean, it hurts a lot. But, you know, the more you get rejected, the less it hurts. The less it hurts, except when you're really excited about one. And
right.
Like, oh,
so some magazine you're aspiring to or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, TJ, I'll let you take a question or two that we'll probably come up on our 5-minute warning and wrap it up.
A 5-minute warning.
Not yet.
tell us about the poets that you love to read.
So many. I like Jack Gilbert, Jeffrey McDaniel, Brendan Constantine, Patrick Phillips, Victoria Chang, Wisława Szymborska is a Polish poet who has had much of her work translated into English. 4 a.m. is one of my favorite poems of hers. I could go on and on. I have a lot of friends who have published books recently who I love, Anthony Capo, Sebastian Paramo, Arthur Kazakian. So, I mean, they're all amazing. And poetry is great because you can just grab it and you can read one and you can put it back down and that's it. And then you can pick it up again and you can flip to another one. And it's a good thing to have for busy people.
Do your kids watch you and they showing signs of wanting to put crayon to paper and create like mom?
They're a little young, 2 and 4. They know, oh, do you have poetry class tonight? Do you have writing? Do you have your writing class tonight? You know, because a lot of times it starts around their bedtime. And so, you know, dad takes them to bed instead of me. And they're like, what are you doing? Oh, you're going to a reading. Where are you going? Who are you meeting? You know, and so they my four-year-old is starting to get more and more curious about it, but they're a little young. I'm looking forward to being able to take him someday to a reading in the city or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you like to read to your children? Like you've got these wonderful, fresh humans and you're going to bring them literature.
I read them everything. I mean, I spend so much on books. I buy all of the classics, Eric Carle and Where the Wild Things Are. And then there's some new ones. A lot of the ones I look for right now are a little more instructive. Again, have feelings all the time. Mm-hmm. I love you all the time, like those kinds of things. But I'm so excited. I already have a bunch of kids' books that I'm saving on the shelf for them to read to them in the future. And luckily, both of my kids like books. My 2-year-old, she'll just bring me books. She would never stop. She'd be happy for me. So I'm really excited about that. My kids fall asleep listening to Winnie the Pooh on Audible, the audiobook every night. It helps them fall asleep. And, I love audiobooks. So I still like being read to.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that, when our kids go to the library, they'll come back with 50 books each because we live across the street from the library. So it's really easy for them. But my son is reading a book to my mom, right? To my wife right now, at bedtime. Like he'll come in, he's 13 and he reads the books that he's reading to her, kind of a chapter at a time. So it's very cool. It's a great thing to share.
That's great. 13-year-old reading to his parents.
I know.
How did you manage that? I'm going to need some parenting tips from you.
Oh, I don't know. We'll wait another 5 years and we see how it all turns out. So I guess we'll be coming up on the 5-minute warning here. How do you fit writing in with young kids?
I guess that goes back to manufacturing inspiration, is that I write when I can write. So that means if I'm tired and I don't feel like writing right now, but this is my time. This is the time I have, the half hour before they get home, or when I finish work and before they get home, or at night after they go to bed, I have about an hour's worth of energy. And if I don't have, something else, then that's my time. And so I have to do it then. So I have to use a prompt if I'm not feeling it. And also I have a really supportive husband who will take them out when I have a deadline or something, and he'll take them out all day, on a weekend by himself, or do bedtime a couple nights in a row when I have readings or groups that I have to do.
And that's great.
He's really helpful and supportive. I don't think I could do that without him. So just do it when you can.
Well, I do have to say I'm so impressed with the quality of the poetry that comes out of a prompt. I mean, I've done some prompts, but usually I'm very disappointed with the result. So, it's kind of like it's like working a muscle. So it's a workout and I feel a little tired and not all that great. But these are just works of art. Really, they're great.
Thank you. I think part of working with prompts is letting it go when it stops serving you. When the prompt stops being useful, then just letting it go and taking what you do think is working. Relationship Inquest, really quickly, that was one of the strangest prompts I ever had. So we were told to write down three I am metaphor statements. I am a mountain or something like that. And then text it to a random person on our phone from our list. And and no matter what they responded, you had to respond with the next line that you had written. And so I did that actually with two different people that I know. And then this poem came out of their responses to me and sort of became about the feeling you have, the sort of the sadness you have when all the passion is gone from an old relationship. You don't even hate them anymore. You're not even, angry about it. You're just kind of like sad about how something ended. But that came from a prompt like that. And that was really, it started it. What I got back and forth was not poetry, but pulling a word and a line and pulling, I moved away from the prompt pretty quickly. But
do you have a first reader? Is your husband your first reader, or is he not one of those people you trust?
Oh, he reads it, but he doesn't. He's a physicist, so he enjoys it, but he rarely has much commentary.
So it's not a critique.
No, he just reads it and says, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
He likes to read it. But I would say my first readers, though, are from the people that I've developed more personal relationships with from workshops or the critique groups. They tend to see those things first. Mm. And I bring them to them first.
Okay. And then I guess I do have one extra question. It sounded like earlier you were saying that you don't necessarily do a lot of editing on the poetry.
It depends. I do a lot of editing.
Okay.
I was saying it's rare that I don't do a lot of editing. When I don't, it tends to be because I've been thinking about it for a while, but I do a lot of editing. I mean, for me, I always joke that I'm not a writer, I'm a rewriter. So I find it in revision and trying and tweaking and changing and just messing with things and always sort of trying to find a better word or play with the shapes of things or move things around or cut things out. So I really do find revision to be very helpful for me.
Okay, great.
When you're doing your revision work, did you find that that has been a growth in confidence in yourself to go in and perhaps dismantle what you may have written and mess around with it? Did that come naturally to you? Have you learned to trust that you can break it down and put it back together again and play around with it? And I've just noticed with newer writers, they tend to be very tentative with the idea of rewriting. They're scared that what they've got on the page first will be the best.
Right. I think that, yes, I think it comes with confidence. It comes with seeing the work that revision can do when you do have something and you go back and you look at the first, because you can always keep it. And that's the great thing about, you know, writing. It's there. You can always go back. It's not like, you know, gone or something. And so when you do that and you give yourself the freedom to just sort of rethink it and try something different, and then you could look at it, like, this is way this is so much better. And then you realize, especially when you have a good editor or, you know, a good friend who's critiquing you and can help you pull something really good out of it. And you realize, wow, that extra work really is worth it. And I think, you know, again, also maybe with new writers, and when I was a new writer, I was always afraid this was the last thing I was ever going to write. You know, like, this is my last idea. And you kind of get over that. And if it's something, you know, you don't want to get rid of because you're like, oh, but I love this line or I love this idea. It's like, oh, I'll just write something about that later. You know, I can take that out. That's fine. Great. That's another prompt for later. You know, I'll just put that over there and keep a long list of lines that I love. You know, they say kill your darlings. Don't kill them. Just move them somewhere else.
Put them in the box.
Nice.
Use them later. Yeah. And if you think about writing like that, like, this isn't the last poem I'm going to write. This isn't the last essay I'm going to write. I'm going to write more. It's going to be there. So I can always use this later. I think that helps with allowing yourself to go in and break things and cut things out and move things.
That's great.
Yeah. So when are you hosting your first workshop? And I'm being only a little smidge facetious here, because talking to you and listening to you talk about your process but the general process of creativity, you've got a real depth and breadth of experience and knowledge, and strange but true, considering your occupation, you're a brilliant communicator. Okay. And you know, those are such important skills in a teacher, and I just sense that you must bring so much to the table when you're working with other writers.
I really appreciate that. That's incredibly flattering. I'm not doing workshops right now. Maybe someday. I do love teaching, and I did actually teach for a little bit English as a second language when I was living in Turkey. Mm-hmm. But I do love teaching, and I hope in a few years maybe to change direction and start teaching. But the moment that's not feasible. But I with the workshops, online workshops nowadays, you know, maybe someday.
Sounds great.
I've just taken that little seed and popped it into the compost of your creativity.
Thank you.
You've got my number. Call me when you're up.
All right. So now let's move on to our last question, which is always your favorite writing resource or advice that you'd like to give aspiring writers that are listening to the show.
So for resources, the things we've already talked about, finding community, finding people who can challenge you, who can give you ideas, and who can look at your stuff and tell you what's working and tell you what's not working. I mean, finding people who are honest and not just praising you, that can be tough. Mm-hmm. But when you find them, hang on to them and don't let them go. And in terms of just general advice, I have found that there is so much input nowadays. I mean, we were talking about audiobooks, and I listen to podcasts and I listen to audiobooks, and I'm always listening to something when I'm grocery shopping and emptying the dishwasher and folding laundry. I'm always listening, and it's great and it's amazing. And I'm able to, it's the only way I'm able to read because I don't have time with kids and writing to read and to intake things. But I have found that if I'm constantly getting input, I don't have the time to sort of process and think about things. And so as uncomfortable as it is for me to sit in silence or to maybe some like low key music in the background, but nothing that sort of takes my attention and to sort of be bored and sit with my thoughts as I'm folding laundry or as I'm making dinner or something, mm-hmm. just and let myself hear myself. Because yeah. otherwise I can't be putting things together. I can't be, that's where my inspiration happens, even when I'm not writing. So I think that that's really important that you, that writers give themselves time to sit and think. I can't remember which writer it was, or maybe it's apocryphal, but he said, I sit and I look out the window and my wife asked me what I did all day sitting in front of the window and I was writing. and that, you know, that's really what it is that all of that stuff comes from being alone with your thoughts or allowing your thoughts to sort of wander and think. And so when I am having trouble writing, a lot of times I realize it's just because I haven't spent a lot of time with myself lately.
That is wonderful. Mm. And I don't think that's a new one. We've had so many creative recommendations on the show. It's amazing. Well, Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us and sharing your journey. We are so excited to be able to share these poems with the world and wish you great success as you go forward on your writing journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. If so, please do us a huge favor and give us a rating on your favorite podcast app. Also, be sure to tell your writer friends. Ratings and word of mouth are our best tools for expanding the reach of the magazine and podcast. The Story Discovery Podcast is a free, narrated podcast of works that appear in Etched Onyx magazine. Edited by J.W. McAteer, all stories and poems are available at onyxpublications.com. That's onyxpublications.com. If you're feeling extra generous, you can support us at patreon.com/onyxpublications or buymeacoffee.com/onyxpublication with no S. As a nano publishing house, we are always looking for new works to showcase. If you'd like to submit a story or poems for consideration, please visit the submissions page on our website. In the meantime, keep reading and writing.